Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine GitHub. It's this central hub built on trust, where developers, security teams, everyone collaborates. Now, what if that very environment, that system of trust, was weaponized? And not against your average user, but against the security professionals themselves, the people who are supposed to be defending everything. That is the really sophisticated and targeted cybercrime we are diving into today. Our mission is to dissect the WebRat campaign. It's been using massive deception to hide malware inside what look like essential security tools. Basically, they're exploiting the trust of the technical community. It's a huge deal. And for this, we're drawing from a couple of key sources. First, the initial intelligence from Solar4IYS, who first spotted WebRat, and then the really deep forensic analysis from Kaspersky researchers. They're the ones who pinpointed this specific attack method.
Right. And it's so important to understand the malware itself first. WebRat, that's Web Remote Access Trojan, is a really comprehensive tool built for, you know, long-term spying. It started circulating earlier this year. At first, it was targeting the low-hanging fruit.
People looking for pirated software, gaming cheats, that kind of thing.
Exactly. But this is where it gets really interesting. The crucial shift that the researchers found was the pivot. They stopped going after casual users and started targeting security researchers, pen testers, high-level developers.
So why them specifically?
Because they're high-value targets. They have elevated system privileges, incredible access to corporate networks, sensitive data. It's a complete change in strategy.
And it's a brutal strategy because it weaponizes necessity. I mean, if you're a security pro, your job is to download and test exploit code. You have to.
Precisely. This kind of social engineering just blows right past traditional security training. We tell people, don't click on phishing links. But WebRat exploits the fact that security teams are actively looking for this stuff.
They're almost willing victims because the bait is perfectly designed for their job.
They are, in a way. The lure aligns perfectly with their professional tasks.
So if you're trying to fool a technical audience, the bait has to be good. What were the specific lures? What did these fake repos claim to be?
So Kaspersky found 15 malicious repositories, and they were all built with just incredible detail. They used high-profile critical vulnerabilities, you know, CVEs, the kind of thing that makes a researcher stop everything and take a look.
Like what? What were the big ones?
Well, for example, they faked an exploit for CVE 2025-59295. They described it as a critical heap-based buffer overflow in Windows MSHTML.
Okay, for anyone not familiar, what does that actually mean?
It's severe. It basically lets an attacker write data outside of a program's approved memory space, which allows them to inject and run their own code.
So they can execute pretty much anything they want.
Anything. It's an immediate red alert kind of vulnerability. If it were real, everyone would need the exploit to test their systems.
And I'm guessing they didn't just stop at Windows vulnerability?
Not at all. They also went after web security pros with a fake exploit for CVE 2025-10294. This one claimed to be an authentication bypass in a WordPress plugin, the OwnID passwordless login plugin.
An authentication bypass, so you can just log in as an admin with no password.
That's what it claimed. You can imagine how appealing that would be to a pen tester.
So they've got operating systems, web security. What was the third one?
The third big one was CVE 2025-59230, a Windows privilege escalation flaw. It promised system-level permissions, which is, you know, the highest possible access you can get on a Windows machine, the keys to the kingdom.
And the sources say these repositories weren't just code dumps. They were elaborate.
Oh, absolutely. Detailed vulnerability descriptions, explanations of how the exploit allegedly worked, even mitigation advice.
It's the whole package. It screams legitimacy.
And what's fascinating here, and this connects to the bigger picture, is that it seems a lot of this text was generated by AI.
AI, how could they tell?
The consistency. The high level of technical detail, the uniform structure across all 15 repositories, it points straight to automated scaling.
That completely changes the economics of deception, doesn't it?
It does. You don't need a team of expert writers anymore. You can just get an AI to generate very credible, very convincing malicious content at scale.
Which helps them rank higher in GitHub search results and just catch more people.
Exactly. AI isn't just writing code, it's engineering trust.
That is a critical insight. Okay, let's shift to the tech. Once someone falls for it and downloads the package, what happens? How does it get past security?
It's a multi-layered approach. It all starts with a password-protected ZIP archive in the GitHub repo.
A password? That seems weird for an open source tool.
It's a brilliant evasion tactic. On the technical side, the password blocks automated security scanners. They can't open the archive to see what's inside.
And on the human side,
It creates a sense of exclusivity. It makes the user think, oh, this must be a really sensitive, powerful exploit, which counterintuitively makes it feel more authentic.
Okay, so the user downloads the ZIP, finds the password, and opens it. What's inside?
It's a deceptive little package. You've got a text file with the password, a corrupted decoy DLL file just to look legitimate, and then the core payload kicked off by a batch file.
And that batch file is where the real trouble starts.
Correct. The batch file executes the dropper, and this dropper is named rasmanes.exe.
It sounds like a Windows system file.
It's meant to. It's designed to mimic legitimate Windows remote access components, so it just blends in. It's a form of defense evasion.
But once that's running, it moves fast.
Ruthlessly fast. First, it tries to elevate its privileges to get the highest possible access. Second, and this is critical, it systematically disables Windows Defender.
It takes out the main defense barrier right away.
Immediately. So by the time anyone might notice a suspicious file, the primary defense is already offline.
Wow. And then it calls home.
Exactly. Only after Defender is down does it connect to a hard-coded command and control server, the C2 server.
Yeah, and that's where it downloads the full WebRat payload.
That's when the real infection begins.
So given they're going after these high-value targets, they need persistence. How does WebRat make sure it survives a reboot or a cleanup attempt?
It's very sophisticated. It uses a redundant layered approach. That's why it's so hard to get rid of. It uses three main mechanisms at the same time.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first is standard registry modifications. It creates entries in the system registry to make sure the malware executes every time the user logs in or the system restarts.
Classic but effective. What's the second layer?
The second is the Windows Task Scheduler. This is much stealthier. It sets up scheduled tasks to run the malware at certain times or when certain things happen, like the network connecting. So even if you clean the registry, the task scheduler brings it right back.
And the third layer, the one that's hardest to deal with.
That would be file system injection. WebRat makes multiple copies of itself and hides them in random system directories.
Using names that look like other system files.
Right. So you have all these copies hidden all over the place. This triplicate approach makes complete manual removal almost impossible.
Okay. So the target is compromised. Defenses are down. The malware is persistent. What's the end game? What is WebRat actually trying to steal?
It's laser focused on credentials, things that are either easy to monetize directly or provide a way into corporate networks.
It's all about lateral movement.
It is. The target list tells a story. They go after personal, professional, and financial data all at once. First up are gaming and communication platforms. Steam accounts are a huge target.
Why Steam? For the games.
For the digital assets, the stored payment info, and they're often used for money laundering.
Then you mentioned communication channels.
Right. They aggressively target Discord accounts. So many tech communities and even companies use Discord, so compromising an account can be a backdoor into a very sensitive environment.
And Telegram, too, I saw.
Yes, same idea with Telegram. Getting access to private, encrypted conversations, contact lists. It's a goldmine for more social engineering.
Right.
But the most direct prize is cryptocurrency wallet data.
Ah, of course.
WebRat is built to scan for wallet files, private keys, seed phrases. That is instant, untraceable theft.
And it's not just stealing files. The sources call it a full surveillance toolkit. What can it do in real time?
The surveillance is alarming. It can remotely activate the victim's webcam.
And often without the little indicator light coming on, right?
Often, yes. So attackers can be visually monitoring the victim's physical space, which is terrifying. And it couples that with screenshot capture. It takes pictures of the screen at regular intervals or when specific apps are open, like a banking site or a corporate terminal.
So they can see passwords as you type them.
See passwords, see proprietary data. The webcam gives them physical context. The screenshots give them digital context. It's complete, continuous spying.
This just highlights how vigilant you have to be. For you listening, what are the red flags? What specific warning signs show that a GitHub repo might be malicious?
The researchers point to a few key things. First, check the account age and activity. If a brand new account suddenly publishes a bunch of amazing zero-day exploits, that should be an immediate red flag. Legitimacy is earned over time.
Right. And what about the content itself?
Look at the content quality. Even with AI, you can sometimes spot generic descriptions or writing that seems too polished, too uniform across different projects.
And the biggest red flag we talked about earlier.
The password protected archive. That is just not how the open source community works. It violates the whole principle of transparency and should set off alarm bells immediately.
And we should remember not to trust social proof, right?
Yeah.
Things like star counts and comments can be faked.
Absolutely. They can be bought. So that can't be your only reason for trusting a project.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, how should security pros do this kind of research safely?
The sources are clear. You have to layer your defenses. The number one defense is an isolated testing environment.
You mean a virtual machine, a VM?
A VM is the gold standard, yes. And it needs to be completely sandboxed. No access to your production network, no sensitive data, nothing. You should even consider network segmentation to keep that testing VM isolated from the rest of your office network.
And what about before you even run the code?
Manual or static code review is crucial. You have to look for suspicious behavior.
Okay.
Look for code that tries to connect to outside URLs, that modifies the system registry, or, you know, has functions specifically designed to disable Windows Defender. And finally, source verification is non-negotiable. Check the vulnerability details against official sources like the National Vulnerability Database, and check the developer's reputation.
Okay, let's talk worst case scenario. You suspect a compromise. What's the immediate response?
Time is everything. First step, immediate system isolation. Unplug the network cable. Don't rely on software controls.
Pull the plug. Got it. What's next?
Aggressive credential rotation. Change every single password for every account that was used or stored on that machine. Admin accounts, cloud accounts, crypto wallets, everything. And that has to be followed by a full forensic analysis to see what they took and where they went. But because of those three persistence mechanisms, remediation is really, really hard.
Which leads to the nuclear option.
It does. For a confirmed web rat infection, the only guaranteed safe path is a complete system rebuild from trusted sources. Wipe the machine and start over. And the broader implication here, the big takeaway from this deep dive, is that attacks are evolving. They're moving up the food chain to exploit the unique trust that technical professionals rely on. The WebRat campaign is just a perfect, chilling example of how AI can generate convincing malicious content at a speed and scale we've just never seen before.
Which leaves an important question for you to think about. If AI can now perfectly mimic legitimate security research to exploit the trust built into platforms like GitHub, how do the fundamental principles of open source collaboration and reputation have to change to survive this new era of automated deception?